Welcome to Women Worth Knowing, the radio program and podcast hosted by Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn.
Hello, listeners. We're glad that you returned for part two of Maria Jane Dyer Hudson, first wife of the missionary Hudson Taylor, the one who is the founder of the China Inland Mission. I'm really excited to be joined in studio today with Mary Perro. It's always fun to be with you, Mary.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. It's a great story.
I know. And this is the only time I get to see you. So I actually really, really like this because I really like you. It is. It is our catch-up time. So do you want to bring us up to speed with this story?
I'd love to. So as you already shared, we're talking about Maria, soon to be Hudson, but we started.
Oh, soon to be Taylor.
Soon to be Hudson. Oh, soon to be Taylor.
Yes.
So I'm getting it wrong. We're talking about Hudson Taylor's soon to be wife, Maria Taylor.
Right. Good.
So we picked up the story in China, and Maria's parents were actually some of the very first missionaries in China.
Right.
She was born there, but tragically, her dad died when she was six and her mother when she was 10. So she and her sister ended up going back to England to be raised by her uncle, who was a very godly man. And but of course, you know, she's age 10 when she left. So she still had a lot of the language and the culture and things that she'd learned in China and just really had a heart for the people and for the country that never left her. So, you know, as a young woman, she learned, went to teaching school to learn how to teach and eventually went back to China to work with a Miss, is it Aldersgate?
Aldersey.
Aldersey. Mm-hmm. And so Miss Aldersey ran a girls' school there, and Maria and her sister were teachers. And of course, we have this young man, can't call him dashing, but very interesting young man, Hudson Taylor. And we heard a little bit about his story, which I won't include all that here. If you want to hear that, go back to the first
one. Please go back, yes.
But he is just kind of, he's been serving and has a real heart for the Chinese people, but he's a very different kind of guy. So he's just professed his love. We're going to find out what's going to happen since the two of them have a lot of opponents.
Yes.
But Hudson is, he's a different guy. He's not living the way the rest of the missionaries are living. He's not dressing the way the rest of the missionaries are dressing. But he loves the Lord and he loves Maria. So I'm really excited to hear
what happens next. And he loves the Chinese people.
And he loves the Chinese people. That's right. He's there to serve.
You know what? When you realize that they have this attraction to each other, you're like, this has got to be God. Because she's actually, by everybody's standards, beautiful. And that was one of the things, like, Mary Aldersey is like, what do you see in him? Mm-hmm. You know, how can you be attracted to him? He's shorter than you. I mean, she just raked Hudson Taylor over the coals. Now, I want to say this. This is really hard for Maria, this conflict with Mary Aldersey, because she loved and respected Mary Aldersey. Mary had started this school in Ningpo. She had known her for years. She was valiant in the faith. In fact, I did an episode, I think two episodes on Mary Aldersey earlier. She was, there's a book that I had read on her called The Witch of Ningpo, because the Chinese so distrusted her at first when she came, and when she was starting the school, she went through quite a bit. They thought she was kidnapping their children, and rumors went around that she was eating the Chinese children. You know, so she had gone through quite a bit to have this ministry and this school in China. So she was a seasoned missionary and loved Jesus. But, you know, I think it's important to say, you know, not even seasoned, godly people always get it right.
Mm-hmm.
And so as we do this, it's hard because you want to become really resentful towards Mary Aldersey because of the way she opposes. And I have to say, we used to call this, she was in the flesh. Do you remember that phrase?
I do remember that phrase.
It means that you're not acting spiritually. You're acting according to kind of your instincts. So Hudson returned to Ningpo and was staying with Mr. and Mrs. Jones, and he poured out his heart to them. Mrs. Jones rebuked Miss Aldersey.
Oh, my.
Yep. She went right to her and said, how dare you do this? In doing so, she found out that Maria loved Hudson and was forced to send the letter of refusal. Hudson discovered that Miss Aldersey was not Maria's legal guardian, but that her uncle William Tarn in England was. He wrote to him immediately and uncharacteristically paid the highest postage to get the letter to him as soon as possible. And he asked Mr. Tarn for a blessing to marry Maria. So again, this is just not what Hudson Taylor does. He's always, remember, he's the man who does his own hair.
Right? He's cutting his own hair. Exactly. Yeah, he's coming in hot with this love story.
He really is.
Paying the full postage.
Exactly. So Miss Aldersey went to the Reverend Russell, who was the bishop, the Anglican kind of bishop over China. And she poisoned him. And she got him to write disparaging letters about Hudson to Mr. Tarn. And she also wrote a letter. So all of them are waiting for William Tarn, who is Maria's uncle, his response, because he and his wife are the legal guardians. Miss Aldersey, in the meantime, sent word to Hudson that if he would return to London and finish his medical training and then return for Maria's hand, she might consider it. In private, she told others that she would never approve of Hudson Taylor. Uh-oh. Maria responded that if Hudson chose to further his education for her hand rather than remain in China for the Lord's work, she would not want to marry such a man. It was the fact that he always put God's will first that was Maria's strongest draw. Isn't that sweet?
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, two other suitors sought the affection of Maria. One of them roomed with Hudson Taylor for a while, and Hudson was trying to be quiet about that till he got the permission from the uncle. And this man's just like, oh, I think I'm going to ask Maria to marry me. And he's tall and he's well-built and he's good-looking. And Hudson wants to go, no, yeah. But he can't say anything. And so he just has to take it to prayer. So Hudson threw himself into famine relief, teaching, mission work, evangelism, and doctrine. So he wrote the letter in November of 1957. He was so overworked that in the summer of 1857, he fell seriously ill. During his month of convalescence, Maria visited him and held his hand. He was just slightly aware that she was in the room. He didn't know if maybe it was an angel or if it was really Maria. When they saw each other again, and this was interesting because she was forbidden from seeing him, but she was allowed to go to Mrs. Jones' house. And so Hudson happened to be at the Jones' house right then, and Maria didn't know it. And he was leaving and she was coming in the back door and they ran into each other because he found out she was coming. And he felt like, I better leave, you know, because I want to honor Miss Aldersey. So he went to go out the back door, but that was the door she chose to come in. And when they saw each other, they fell into each other's arms.
Oh, my.
Yes. And they kissed. And they spent the next 6 hours professing their love to each other.
Oh, my.
And there was more than one kiss. On the morning of December 11th, a letter arrived from Mr. Tarn. He had received all the letters, Hudson's, Miss Aldersey's, and the Reverend Russell. He had the greatest admiration for Hudson and found the letters of Miss Aldersey and Reverend Russell lacking in Christian piety and charity.
Oh, my.
He forthwith gave his blessing for Maria to marry Hudson. Miss Aldersey and Reverend Russell were not through. They made many attempts to stop the wedding. In fact, one of the things that Russell did is you had to have the English representative who was like, you know, the governor, so to speak, sanction the wedding, sign off on it, like the wedding certificate.
Okay.
And he had to be present, or he had to have someone of his, you know, rank present at the wedding. So Russell invited him to go hunting, and he couldn't turn Russell down because he was the bishop, you know, representing the Anglican Church. So he went. But before he did, he signed the marriage certificate, and he gave full authority to his assistant to sanction and be present at Maria and Hudson's wedding.
So even at the start, they've got so many people against them.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So on January 20th, 1858, Maria and Hudson became husband and wife. You know, it's sad when the people of God are against you. It's, you know, those people who have the same ministry that you're all trying to minister to the Chinese. You all want to see them saved. And when you turn on each other, Jesus said it was by our love that all men would know we were his disciples. And when we turn on each other, it just ruins that witness. And that was one of the things that Hudson Taylor and Maria refused to do, was to turn on Russell or to turn on Miss Aldersey. In fact, Hudson made many attempts with both of them to make peace, and they both refused. People noticed a change in Hudson after he married Maria. Though he was brilliant, her education was far superior. She greatly improved his English. In fact, people used to complain all the time about his letters home and his grammar and his letters. And so she taught him English grammar again. She'd been a school teacher, too. Also, her grasp of the Chinese language and people became indispensable to him. She knew the culture better than he did. She also made him take holidays. And with Maria beside him, Hudson Taylor's depression lifted because he was prone to depression that would actually make him sick, paralyze him. Very soon, Maria became pregnant with their first child, but he was he didn't make it. He died, and he was stillborn. In February 1859, Maria was 3 months pregnant, and she became desperately ill. They theorized that perhaps she had TB, tuberculosis. Hudson watched as he was sure Maria was dying. He thought of a medicine he might try, but didn't want to do it without consulting Dr. Parker, who was 2 miles away. Hudson ran the 2 miles, not wanting to leave Maria, and prayed fervently all the while that he was running. He just, you know, felt bad because he had left her alone, but he's running, he's praying. When he got to Dr. Parker, he told Dr. Parker all about the symptoms and everything, and Dr. Parker thought that the medication that he was suggesting was the perfect medication. So then Hudson Taylor says, all right, and
gotta
he runs
run home.
All the way back to Maria. However, when Hudson returned, he found Maria out of crisis and already on the mend.
Wow.
Not by medication.
No.
But by those fervent prayers.
Mm-hmm.
On July 31st, 1859, their first daughter, Gracie, was born. And she had no deficits. And considering how sick Maria had been, it was amazing that Gracie was so, so healthy. They said that Hudson Taylor immediately took to Gracie. She was the apple of his eye. In August of 1859, Dr. Parker's wife died. He was obliged to return to England with his 3 children. So he gave his dispensary, all the medical equipment, and his practice to Hudson to maintain. So Hudson Maria took over this clinic, but they longed to evangelize the interior of China. And again, it was a huge expense and required lots of support, financial support. And at this time, he is fully disillusioned with Christian Missionary Society because they are not giving him any money. Dr. Parker was also a CMS, and they hadn't given him any support. And so these missionaries are living on, seriously, the grace of God, whoever sends them support, because the CMS is hiring secretaries and different people, and it's all going to the operation in London and not to the missionaries. And so Hudson begins to think to himself, man, if I ever had a missionary society, it would be based on the mission field. That would be where the headquarters are, where you can see and know the need. And the person in England would just simply be funneling all the funds down to the headquarters in China. So he's thinking all of this. So they were released in 1861. Another doctor came and they were able to hand over the dispensary, and they felt so good because they were just like, Hudson was like, I'm an evangelist. I don't want to just be treating patients all day long. And Maria was getting frustrated too. She started like a little school, but she wanted to do more. In 1860, Maria Hudson, Gracie, and one of the Chinese believers, Lei Jun, traveled to London. Hudson and Maria were both in such bad health. They had gotten sick from all the work at the hospital, and Hudson was always just overworking himself. So Lei Jun came to help them with Gracie and to help them settle in. And he stayed with Hudson for 2 years. He wouldn't leave them in London because their health had been so precarious. He was married and had a family back in China, but he explained it to his family, I will be back. And so after 2 years, he did return. Hudson and Maria stayed with Hudson's sister, Amelia, who lived in London. She herself had 10 children. So you can imagine that was a busy household. During their time in London, Hudson finished his medical training. And when he took his exams, he left Maria at a little tea shop, and she stayed there just right across the street from where he was taking his exams and prayed the entire time. Hudson Taylor said he looked over the exam and he didn't know the answer to one of the questions.
Oh, no.
He just was like, it was like swimming, and he knew it was his nerves. But he prayed, and as he prayed, all of a sudden, he knew the answer to every single question, and he answered it, and he scored really high on all his exams. Also, during his time, after he did his exams, he set to doing a better translation of the Bible into Chinese.
Oh,
the
one
that he had been using, he didn't feel caught like the vernacular. You know, there are two ways to translate the Bible. One is a word for word, and the other is a dynamic equivalent. And so he was shooting more for the dynamic equivalent because certain phrases in the Bible would not translate into Chinese.
Right.
And there wouldn't be an understanding of it. And so what he did is a dynamic equivalent tries to find something in China that is the same concept as what you see in the word. So he starts rewriting this. And Dr. Frederick Gao, who you had met earlier, he came back from China for a furlough because his wife was sick. Unfortunately, his wife died the day that the ship docked in England. She died. Oh. And so, you know, but he comes and he begins to help them with this translation. And his Chinese was bar none. It was better than anybody else's. So then they finish it. But Russell, remember Bishop Russell, who is now in England, he gets a hold of it and he just trashes it. He says, oh, no, this is no good. This is blasphemy. Oh, it's terrible. No, 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 no. And so Hudson is frustrated because he spent about 17 hours a day working on this.
Wow.
So he begins then to go and to share the vision, and he and Maria begin to formulate and feel from the Spirit that they are supposed to start their own missionary society. And they're thinking, we want to penetrate into the interior. And Hudson begins to study about China, just all the people living in China, how many people die, like 12,000 people died every minute in China, the starvation, all that was going on. And he started to study all these facts. And as he studied the facts, he became more and more burdened for the Chinese and Maria too. And they begin to pray and pray and pray. Well, Hudson was being asked to share in different places. So he began to share all of these things. And people said, you should write a book. And so he wrote a book on what was going on in China. It became a bestseller. He even had more occasions to speak. But Maria became pregnant again with their and gave birth to their third child, Herbert, in 1861. She gets pregnant again with their fourth child, another boy, Frederick Howard Taylor. He was born in 1862, and I think the Frederick might have been after Mr. Gao, Reverend Gao. In 1863, Maria and Hudson began to pray the Lord of the Harvest to raise up more laborers for China. They felt that if they only had 24, if they could just have 24, and they didn't care what rung of society they came from. They wanted people who had nothing else to live for, no prospects in England, and everything to gain by ministering for Jesus in the interior of China.
That's something really interesting that you're bringing up, because that had already played out a little bit earlier in our story with Miss Aldersey thinking that Hudson wasn't of the right class. And
exactly.
So this is kind of a new idea that missionaries shouldn't have to be of an educated class or a particular look or whatnot.
Yes.
And they just need to have a heart to serve the Lord.
And Hudson and Maria said, we'd like to train them. Mm-hmm. We'd like to teach them Chinese. We'd like to teach them the customs. And so as these recruits begin to come in, they begin to teach them the customs and the language of China.
So they're still getting all the training. It's just not based on a class system or
exactly.
class.
Exactly. And they also at the same time, not only did they teach them Chinese and the culture of China and all of these, but as they're doing this, money begins to pour in from all these people, unexpected sources. And so now they have this money. And so Mr. Berger, who had been a support to Hudson in the beginning, agrees to take over the China Inland Mission and just funnel that money to them when they return to China. In 1864, Marie gave birth to Samuel Dyer Taylor. Can you imagine? So now she's got quite a few children.
Five children, right?
Right. Well, Gracie and three boys. So four children.
Okay.
Hudson wrote China's Spiritual Need and Claims. He also began to tour the United Kingdom. So he was not just in England, but he also goes to Ireland, to Scotland, to share the mission of the newly formed China Inland Mission. People talked about his quiet, powerful and passionate demeanor, especially when he spoke of China, and support began to pour in. While Hudson was touring, he wrote to Maria every single day. In December 1865, Maria gave premature birth to a little girl who she named Jane Dyer Taylor. Jane died at birth. It looked as though Maria was close to death herself. It took her until February, and this was December when she gave birth, to recover, and the health of her lungs became permanently impaired. Apart from Maria, Hudson admitted to feeling raw and achy. He relied on her encouragement, her understanding, and her laughter. She instinctively seemed to understand him and know his thoughts. Hudson Maria, along with six men and nine women, sailed to China May 26, 1866, on the Le Memoir. At first, the crew resented the Christian party, but when they saw their joy and that they were playing games and their willingness to help the crew, they endeared themselves to the whole crew. The ship itself endured two typhoons and barely survived them, and they would not have survived at all if Hudson Taylor, the men that he had recruited, one was a blacksmith, two were engineers, hadn't stepped in and saved the engine and repaired it over and over again. And all of them bailed out the water that was filling the engine room. I mean, they were just servants. They're like, we're here to help. And they didn't treat the crew like second-class citizens. Often the people and the missionaries wouldn't even speak to the crew. And they spoke to the crew and helped them so much.
That's beautiful.
Right. So the crew was close to mutiny at one point, but was dissuaded by prayer, love, and the assistance of the recruits and Hudson and Maria Taylor. When they reached China, they set up a headquarters in a place called Hangzhou, which is right on the coast. Mary conducted lessons in Chinese as well as taught her own children. The ship had landed, I forgot to tell you this, September 30th, 1866 in Shanghai. And when they landed, they immediately had their recruits put on the Chinese costume. Now, there was a couple who had gone with them, the Nichols, and they, from the moment they took off their Western wear, began to resent Hudson and began to sow discord. And this became a real lesson to Hudson to really pray about every recruit. Don't just be so excited that somebody's willing to go, but really screen them. Mm-hmm. Now, before this, they didn't have any screening process. They were just like, yay, you want to come?
Well, it was a new organization.
Exactly.
It was a new way of doing things, but just realizing that this is a very important part.
The unrest got so great among the 24 recruits that Hudson called a prayer meeting. And during the prayer meeting, there was lots of confession, lots of repentance from everyone except for Mr. and Mrs. Nichol.
Mm.
So Hudson began to send the missionaries into the interior in different places. And he and Maria decided to establish a post in a place called Hangzhou. Maria was pregnant again. But on the way to Hangzhou from Shanghai, she still taught the women recruits some of the Chinese protocol. Hudson found a large compound to rent. However, the former tenants wanted to stay and did for a time. And they love the missionaries there. So that was interesting. Mm-hmm. So we'll probably pause here. That was part two. We're going to go on to part three. You don't want to miss it because you begin to see the beginnings of the China Inland Mission that became a huge success. Thousands were saved. The fruit still continues, but all the spiritual warfare that they went through to get there. So come back for Maria Hudson.
Thank you for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn. For more information on Cheryl, visit CherylBroderson.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. For more information on Robin, visit RobinGunn.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. Join us each week for a lively conversation as we explore the lives of well-known and not-so-well-known historical and contemporary Christian women. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode. Make sure you rate us on your podcast app, subscribe, and share it with a friend. Thank you again for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn.